Good evening. Thank you for joining us. For only the fourth time in the history of our democracy, there will be a trial of a U.S. president. And with the unprecedented second impeachment of former President Trump, for many it's like deja vu all over again.
A simple walk filled with historic significance. Today, for the first time in the United States, an article of impeachment delivered against an American president for the second time.
Donald John Trump engaged in high crimes and misdemeanors by inciting violence against the government of the United States.
Tonight is a reminder of how serious this is. First time ever that a president has been impeached twice.
This historic handover is setting the stage for another trial in the U.S. Senate, and no president has ever faced this after leaving office.
This is a big moment filled with symbolism and history.
The biggest challenge that the House Democrats have is convincing Republicans in the Senate that you can even do this, that you can actually have an impeachment trial for a president that's already gone.
While we've impeached presidents before, no president has ever been convicted in the Senate.
This new attempt to convict Donald Trump stems from the president's role in inciting the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol back on January 6th.
Fight like hell.
His supporters invoking his name in this video from The New Yorker.
There's a million of us out there, and we are listening to Trump, your boss.
The article also accuses him of trying to subvert and obstruct the results of the 2020 election by pressuring the Georgia Secretary of State to find nearly 12,000 votes to help him win.
How much evidence do Democrats have on Donald Trump?
A whole book. Democrats have a whole book of evidence against Donald Trump. I think we're going to find that there was a lot more connection between this president and what happened at the Capitol a couple weeks ago.
This historic moment happening against the backdrop of the ongoing pandemic, as the man currently in the White House works steadily to undo the legacy Trump left behind.
Thank you very much for being here.
President Joe Biden has signed more than 30 executive actions in his first 5 days in office.
I don't think you're going to see Joe Biden or the Biden White House say much at all about the impeachment trials. Joe Biden has a hugely ambitious agenda, and the last thing that Biden or his top advisors want is to see the Senate tied up in knots.
A new poll found more than half of Americans, 52%, say they want to see the Senate convict Trump. Slightly more, 57%, want the Senate to bar Trump from ever holding federal office again. Back in 2019, when Trump was impeached the first time, the line was purely partisan. But this time, 10 House Republicans joined Democrats voting to oust Trump.
This may cost me my job. It may not. But this is the kind of decision that is worth putting it all on the line, because quite honestly, more time in Congress is not worth losing what I believe to be an honor losing vote.
In private conversations that Donald Trump has been having, I'm told he has been quite direct in making it clear that it's essentially a threat that any Republican in the Senate who would dare vote to convict him in this impeachment trial, he will go after, and he will go after hard.
Over in the Senate, some fellow Republicans like Mitt Romney agree it was the right decision.
I believe that what is being alleged and what we saw, which is incitement to insurrection, is an impeachable offense. If not, what is?
At least 17 Senate Republicans would have to vote to convict, but a growing number are vehemently opposing the trial, like Senator Marco Rubio.
I think the trial is stupid. I think it's counterproductive. We already have a flaming fire in this country, and it's like taking a bunch of gasoline and pouring it on top of the fire. The first chance I get to vote to end this trial, I'll do it, because I think it's really bad for America. If you want to hold people accountable, there's other ways to do it, particularly for presidents.
Former Republican Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich also criticized the trial on Fox News.
This whole thing is based on, I think, a very dangerous dictatorship of the Washington elites. I don't think they have the right to tell the American people that Donald Trump can't run again. And if that's not the purpose of this, it has no purpose. He's already out of office, so they can't impeach him out of office because he's already gone.
You know, I think the question around mootness is not valid. I mean, I think the reality is that this happened. It happened while he was president. He uses presidential powers to make this happen. And it doesn't matter if he's not president anymore.
Romney also took aim at other members of Congress who supported Trump's lies about election fraud.
The reality is this is something that was made up, and it's had enormous damage. And those that participated in spreading that, I think, will recognize that they now have a responsibility to set the record straight and to say, in fact, we never did see hard evidence of a widespread fraud of the nature that would reverse the election. That is something I think that's essential today.
Today marked an important procedural step. Tomorrow, U.S. senators will be sworn in as jurors. But both sides have agreed to delay the trial by 2 weeks.
My sense is that every day that we get past January 6th, it becomes harder to convict Donald Trump. That said, there are more revelations that come out. There is a sense, you know, on part of some that, well, maybe as the investigations move forward, there'll be more information, it'll be more damning. But what's more damning than what we saw on January 6th? He's been impeached by the House, but if he's not convicted by the Senate, if he's not banned from running for office in the future, then the argument is he's gotten away with it. There was no accountability.
If Trump is convicted and banned from running again, many still doubt it would be the end of his power.
So do you think we're seeing the closing days of Trump's Republican Party, or is a new book being written right now?
You think about the movement that is now built around Donald Trump. That won't go away just because you remove him from that. I also know that Donald Trump's personality is not one that goes away. I think he continues to lead even if he's not in a position of traditional political power.
Earlier this evening, I spoke with one of the 9 lawmakers who delivered the impeachment documents and will prosecute the president, Colorado Democratic Congressman Joe Neguse. Congressman Neguse, thank you so much for joining us. First question, do you think you have enough votes to convict him?
Well, it's good to be with you, Byron. First, let me just say today was a really solemn and important day as we transmitted the article of impeachment to the United States Senate, only the 4th time in our country's history, in the history of our republic, that has happened. We believe that there's a compelling case to be made and to be presented to the United States Senate that this president, former president, incited an insurrection that many of us bore witness to on January 6th at our nation's capital. Ultimately, we will present that case, and the managers are prepared to present the facts and the evidence. And my hope is that the senators will consider the evidence we present in an impartial way. And if they do so, I believe they'll reach the same conclusion that me and so many others, Republicans and Democrats, have reached, which is that the president committed a high crime and misdemeanor that warrants removal.
Republicans say that impeaching the president will only divide the country further. What's your response?
Byron, I think that unity is important, healing is critically important, but we also need accountability. It's important that we ensure that this never happens again in the future, and that we make clear to future generations that this type of conduct simply cannot be tolerated in a constitutional republic like ours. It cannot be that in our country, the greatest democracy this world has ever known, that a president could incite an insurrection and avoid any consequences simply by doing so at the very end of their term.
And final question, we have about 30 seconds left. If someone who was in the Capitol that day in harm's way, what do you want the American people to know about that day?
It was a harrowing day for the Congress. It was a harrowing day for our country. The first time that the Capitol, the Citadel of Liberty, had been breached since the War of 1812. But I think it's also important for folks to know that we came back, that the Congress was undeterred and would refuse to be intimidated into abdicating its constitutional oath to certify the election results. We returned, and as you know, Byron, we spent all evening into the early morning hours on January 7th, 4 a.m. in the morning, to finish the work that we had started. And that was important for America to see. It was important for the world to see. Our republic endured, and it will continue to endure.
Congressman Joe Neguse, thank you so much, sir, for your time. We will see you down the road.
Thank you, sir.
And coming up, Fauci on the pandemic front lines, hindsight and hope.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
One year into the pandemic, there's a new administration, a new assessment over what America got right and wrong. Center stage from the start, Dr. Anthony Fauci. Here's ABC's Lindsay Davis.
As you know, many Americans just want to know, when are things going to be normal again?
I think there will be a strong turn towards a degree of normality. I don't think it's going to be absolutely the way it was months before we even knew about COVID-19, but I don't think it's going to be anything like it is right now.
From coast to coast, mass vaccination sites are on the way as the U.S. desperately tries to get a grip on the coronavirus pandemic. And presenting new challenges are concerns over rapidly spreading variants of COVID-19 entering the United States. The UK variant, now detected in at least 26 states, is believed to be more contagious. Dr. Anthony Fauci, chief medical advisor to the president and a veteran of multiple health crises, believes the vaccines will still be effective against the new strains as long as we remain cautious. Now let's talk about these new strains. Thankfully, it appears thus far the more concerning South African strain is not in the U.S. Given how contagious the new UK strain is, do Americans need to be kind of back in that same mindset where we were in March and try to stay home even more to avoid these new, more contagious variants?
It is about, according to the estimates of the people in the UK, about twice as transmissible and maybe even increase in its virulence or its ability to cause serious disease. Whenever you have that, you obviously need to double down a bit on the public health measures, which we should be doing anyway. Physical distancing, uniform wearing of masks, avoiding congregate settings, particularly indoors, doing things, weather permitted, as much outdoors as we possibly can, and washing your hands very frequently. If everyone uniformly did that, regardless of the mutant involved, we'd be much better off.
The Biden administration is now reimposing the travel ban for Brazil, the UK, Ireland, and 26 countries across Europe, and restricting travel from South Africa, banning most non-U.S. citizens who have recently traveled to the country from entering the United States. And starting tomorrow, all international airline passengers must show proof of a negative test before boarding a plane to the U.S. But vaccine shortages remain a problem. What, in your mind, needs to be done to get this right as far as smoothing out the process between the federal government and the states and American arms?
There was an inconsistent partnership between the federal government and the states. I mean, on the one hand, you don't want the federal government to do it all, but you also don't want to just leave the states on their own and say, here you go, here's the vaccine, go ahead and do what you want. You've got to have a steady flow of material. You've got to have communication. You have to have coordination and cooperation.
Dr. Fauci also shared the difficulties of working with the Trump administration. Now, in a wide-ranging interview with the New York Times, you talked about how in the heart of the pandemic, the president asked you to be more positive. What was that like in the time, and how difficult was it for you to feel like you were on the sidelines, unable to speak up honestly about what the reality was?
Well, I did speak up honestly about what the reality was, and that likely was one of the things that put me on the sideline. It didn't give me any great pleasure in contradicting the president of the United States. I have a great deal of respect for the office of the presidency, but there comes a time when you hear things that are being said that are just not reality. They're not in accordance with what is actually going on, And at that point, in order to maintain my integrity as well as the good of the American public, I had to come forth and say, no, I'm sorry, I disagree with you. We're not turning the corner. Things are not as good as you're saying as it is. And as you know, when I did that, for one reason or other, I was not as able to be public as possible because I was not let out to the press.
His family also received multiple death threats, one incident requiring the FBI inside his home.
You said that you opened a letter at one point and white powder popped out all over you. What happened next in that moment?
This is the life I chose, and this is what I do. So as strange as it may seem to people, you know, threats on my life, harassment of me, does not bother me as much at all. I get more concerned, if not outraged, at the impact it has on my children. With regard to what you asked, the day that I innocently and probably stupidly opened up an envelope and just pulled out a letter and the powder came all over my face and all over my chest and my shirt, I said, well, there's one of three possibilities here. Either it's a hoax, it's anthrax, which would mean that I'd have to go on ciprofloxacin for about a month or two, or it's ricin, which means I'm a dead duck no matter what I do. It was terrible, but the most negative part about that entire experience was it frightened the heck out of my children when they found out about it, and my wife too. I mean, I've decided I'm doing something that might be dangerous, but that's it. I chose it. My children did not choose that, did not choose that.
If you are able to reflect back on this crazy past year, what would you say would be your biggest mistake? Or beyond that, maybe if you could have a mulligan and do something over, what would it be?
You know, very likely it would have been early on to really try to get as much more information about the fact that this virus can be spread by people without symptoms. We did not know that then. I wish that I had known it earlier than I knew it, because if I did, there would have likely been differences and more stringent recommendations.
The CDC reports just under 21 million doses have been administered out of the 41 million distributed. In response to the crisis, the Biden administration has promised 100 million doses will be administered in the first 100 days.
There are some areas of the country where there's vaccine lying around and it's not going into people's arms. I just got off the phone with a city and a state in which they have so many more people lined up who want to get vaccinated and they don't have vaccine. So that kind of dichotomy and disparity is something that we really need to address, find out how to fix it, and fix it.
And finally tonight, wowing the crowd. UCLA gymnast Nia Dennis is no stranger to success. The 21-year-old delivering a near-perfect floor performance in a competition that has gone viral, celebrating black excellence with that hip-hop routine featuring beats from black artists like Kendrick Lamar to Soulja Boy, helping her school win by bringing down the house. It was a professional football player from the 1930s, Ralph Marston, who said, excellence is not a skill, it's an attitude. And that young lady has plenty of attitude. That's Nightline for this evening. We'll see you right back here, same time tomorrow. Thanks for the company, America. Good night.